Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
An absolute fave by Sir Nige Waymaker takes us to 10 minutes after 4 o'clock. Very good afternoon to you if you've just tuned in. Happy Monday. No, not Happy Monday. Happy Monday it is. I'm looking at Dr. Amanda there as we're about to have our leadership nuggets with him. And I'm like, Happy Monday. And he looks at me, not Dr. Amanda, but Happy Monday. And yesterday was Father's Day. Today is Youth Day. So Happy Youth Day. But we're going to take a step back a little bit and say, Happy belated Father's Day, Dr. Amanda.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
How are you doing today?
Yesterday was amazing. I'm doing well and doing my best to rest. Like you're saying that many of us are supposed to be resting.
Yeah, but we're not resting because, hey, here we are in studio. There's no escape. There is no escape, unfortunately. You got yourself in an industry that has no rest.
I see. I'm learning very slowly. But we love what we do, so yeah. This doesn't feel like work.
Exactly. I love to hear that. Otherwise, how was your Father's Day?
It was amazing. I got a beautiful gift, which was a small voucher called, and in that voucher, it was a two-hour nap.
So I saw that. So did you utilize the voucher, though?
I did. But the same people that gave me the voucher, you know, the kids, you know, they kept knocking every now and again before the end of the 2 hours. But okay, I'm on my 2 hours old. Please.
I like that. I like the idea, by the way. I feel like I'm gonna steal it.
Yeah, because, you know, like weekends, that's when, you know, this one needs to be taken to tennis, this one is to go there, this one is that. Uh-huh. So, you know, most of the weekend, usually, you know, you sort of are saving them, if it were. This time around, I got a block of time to rest.
I love that one. I must say, honestly, I'm going to steal it. Like I said, I always wondered to myself how parents cope, and I don't want to lie to you. When I think about it, it actually gives me anxiety to think my kids are growing, and one of these days, I might just need to be that mom that runs around like headless chicken on weekends. Just yesterday, actually, yes. I even thought to myself, maybe it'll be a great idea to actually take them to hostel once all these activities get hectic and only see them on weekends. What do they call them? Week boarders. I make them week boarders. Then I only see them on weekends.
But it's such a joy to also save them and you know, go watch their sports and go do whatever they want to do. But, you know, after a very long week, you know, sometimes just that beautiful afternoon nap after church.
It's needed.
It's just priceless.
I can imagine. Dr. Amanda, let's get right into it. Let's have our quick chat. It is a shorter day, I understand. So let's keep it short. Now, if you don't know who he is, Dr. Amanda is the founding director of Superlead Advisory, and he specializes in strategy, in operations and leadership development. He's a strategist, a leadership coach, like I said, and an author of Lead with Super Clarity, a globally recognized facilitator, and he has moderated high-profile events. Welcome back, Dr. Amanda. Now, let's get it started. Now, since we last sat together, that was when? Last week, actually.
Of course. You know, we're consistent now.
Yeah. You know, I've been reflecting on just how much ground we've covered in this series on building teams that thrive. You know, from the foundational area, or rather idea of psychological safety to dependability, then structure and clarity. And most recently, we touched on the meaning of work. You know, it's been like building a house one layer at a time. So before we dive into today's conversation, then, can you please just, you know, zoom out and take it all in? What has this journey revealed so far? And how does this next theme, which is cultivating impact, you know, build on the pillars that we've already explored?
Oh, lovely, lovely. You know, you ask these like big, loaded questions. And then
my English improves.
You're upgrading me. Yeah, you're upgrading me. Now I'm forced to actually step up and answer at the same level. So, yeah. And it's such a beautiful way to frame it, because thriving teams are really built. Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily sort of, you know, they don't just happen by themselves. Many of us, sometimes we inherit teams. You know, you get promoted and all of a sudden this is your team, or there's a restructure and then there's a team that you're now responsible for.
Yeah.
But to make that a thriving team, there is work to be done. And I think this idea that of like a house, I think it's a beautiful one.
Mm.
And over the past sessions, we have built slowly in constructing the foundation. We began with psychological safety, which is all about creating an environment within your team where people feel safe to speak up,
yep,
to make mistakes and be themselves without you know, kind of fear that they'll be shut down, or they'll be punished, or they'll be ridiculed, or worse things could happen. So let me just sort of pause on this one before we go to the next one and sort of reflect on how in the past couple of months, when I sort of engage with teams and organizations on just this idea of psychological safety, you can feel how much people are yearning for that, and
yeah,
yet it feels like is the thing that is so absent in our organizations, even in big organizations that you admire from afar. But when you start to engage with the teams and then you kind of just talk a bit about psychological safety, the way they lean in, the way they kind of just yearn for that, it's incredible how, and this is anecdotally, but how very few teams might actually have this in their environments. So that was the first one. The second one, we then moved to dependability. And this is the quiet power of being able to count on each other. We said that teams don't thrive just on talent alone, but they thrive when people can take ownership of their work and they can follow through. And then there's this sense that I can depend on my teammate.
Yeah.
The third layer we spoke about was structure and clarity. And that's where we talked about the importance of having clear goals, roles, and shared understanding of the work that we're doing. Research and our own research at Superlead has shown that clarity is one of the strongest predictors of performance.
True.
And in our last episode, which was last week, we turned somewhat inward into the individuals, and we spoke about the meaning of work, talking about, you know, having team members getting that sense that they know why they show up. And we discovered that meaning isn't just luxury, it's essential. It grows when people feel like they are contributing to something bigger than themselves, and that leaders' roles here is to be meaning makers.
Yeah.
And I'm reflecting on the fact that not every task can be glamorous, but every task can have dignity and can be attached to meaning. So those are the sort of the four building blocks that we have walked the journey on. And if you're wondering why those four, we took the Project Aristotle study, which was done at Google. Google wanted to figure out what makes great teams. At Google, and we sort of use the five elements that they spoke about, which then leads me to introduce our fifth and final one, which is what we will discuss in this show today. And in this episode, we shift to why we work,
mm-hmm,
to who helps. Last week, okay, it was about why we do the work, and now this week we are talking about to who the work helps. We move from the inner clarity to outward impact, because meaning is powerful, but impact makes it visible. And in this next pillar, really the ask is, does your team know the difference their work makes?
Hmm.
Do they see the lives that are touched by the work that you do,
sure,
in your organization?
Very interesting. Actually, that's a very interesting question, I must say. And then I think as you asking it, actually, I'm like, imagine if we understood that. I think that's what you're about to unpack for us actually right now. Now, you've touched on something really powerful, Dr. Manda, there. The idea that when people see the difference they make, everything else changes. And I'd love for us to, you know, go a bit deeper on that. What exactly is, you know, task significance? And why has it proven to be such a reliable lever for improving performance and motivation?
Absolutely. So for today's conversation, as you know, we reference the work that we do and the research, and we also pull in beautiful pieces of work that's done by others. And today we are largely going to unpack the work done by a phenomenal researcher, Adam Grant. And his research has shown that even the smallest glimpse of impact. Mm-hmm. You know, when you do the work and then you just have a visibility on the person that work has touched, even yep. at the smallest level, that tends to dramatically like improve
That's
motivation.
So true.
You know, like we're having this show, mm-hmm. if you get just the small glimpse of a story of someone that listened to your show
yep.
and they were about to go this path and then they went this path and this is the ultimate impact, that absolutely elevates performance. So now to answer your question directly, so task significance is one of those concepts. They sound simple, but they yet very, very, very profound. Mm. It's the belief that the work that you have done has made a positive impact on someone else.
Mm.
And today, the bigger question is who that someone is. And sort of hearing the stories that emanates from the task that one has done. You know, it's what Adam Grant's research shows, that belief, after kind of hearing the story, the sense that what I do matters to others absolutely changes the game, especially from a motivation perspective. In one of his well-known studies, he worked with university fundraising callers. So these are the students whose job is to make phone calls to sort of potential funders asking for donation for the university. And you can imagine this is more sort of like a call center. You're getting another number, you're dialing, you know, either you're getting a no, you're getting not yet,
yeah.
you're getting all sorts of answers. Some of us who have kind of been in the call center environment know how that might feel. Then the one day, one of the callers got to be told of the story of the student whose life was impacted by the donation that they've helped raise.
Wow!
And just hearing the impact that the work has done to someone else significantly improved the performance. So, or everything else still the same.
That's pretty much what makes you push as the caller to say, hey, no matter how many no's I get tomorrow's and your call is annoying, but you know that you could get that one donor whose fund could, you know, save one child's life.
Yes. And it's more about once that story is revealed. So today, one of the things we're going to talk about just now is that the impact of the work that the people you lead is already there.
Oh.
We are not trying to create fake enthusiasm or fake motivation.
Mm.
All we ask from leaders is help surface that impact.
Yeah.
And there's some specific strategies we're going to talk about just now. So the impact of your work, Luco, and the show that you do, it's there already.
Mm.
And the ask is, can we surface it? When we do, the impact on motivation, on just engagement with the work,
yeah.
and the performance, and how we want to make it better, it's just unparalleled. And leaders here have a role to bring and surface that impact that's already being done.
I feel like this is also one of my most favorite aspects of this subject. I promise you, You know, working on radio, Dr. Amanda, and I usually used to say this in my early days, to say oftentimes the family or the listeners don't respond as often as they should. And sometimes you think it's about you. Sometimes you think, I'm not too sure how much impact I'm having. I'm not even sure if anyone is listening to me right now or if they enjoy listening. And then one day you'll be walking into a store. I remember this one time, and I can't remember what I said to this lady. She turned around, even at the gym the one time, another lady turned around, looked at me, and she said, "Do you work on radio?" And I stopped for a second. I was like, "Why do you ask?" And she said, "No, I just recognize your voice."
Sure.
I said, "Oh, you do?" And she guessed right. Like, oh, yeah, you definitely know me. We laughed about it. And she started telling me, you know, stories and things that we discuss, you know, with some contributors on the programs, how it's helped her, you know. And in that moment, I thought, the silence does not necessarily mean nobody's life has changed. And it's in those moments that you hear, you go back the next day to studio and you're like, even if I'm alone right now and the lines are quiet, if I can just touch one life, if my sitting here, even if it's not just my word, but whoever I get, about Dr. Mane that I get to engage with, if one person's life can be changed, it's literally worth the 2 hours of me sitting on this chair.
Absolutely. And just that encounter at gym and at the grocery store, and it just that change in outlook. It's priceless. You know, there's not an amount of salary increase that can buy
absolutely
that sense of motivation.
Definitely. Yeah.
And in the Google research, they found that just this ability for managers, for leaders to create the grocery store, more of those grocery store conversations, where in this case, maybe people also come to the station, or, you know, there's more and more opportunities for people to share their stories of the impact that you're doing on radio. And that's all we're asking for today. Just surfacing, making more grocery engagement, making more gym encounters, and letting those stories flow. If you can do that, just the magic in the team, the motivation on the individuals. I must say, I think I also like this one a lot more.
I think generally, I don't know if you remember, there was a song in one of Pastor Benjamin Dube's albums, but what there's a line he says, "A little thank you opens room for more." And I think it's in those thank yous and those appreciations that people get in their line of work that they are encouraged to do more, to stretch a bit further. You know, I was talking to a friend not so long ago who overworks herself for her company so much because she understands things need to be done. And I said to her, sadly, people don't always remember to say thank you to you. But the truth is, you steer the ship.
Sure. And in our conversation today, we wanna take it a step further. So if you do some work for me, we wanna take it a step further and say, you can say thank you, and then if it's at all possible to find a story to say thank you, Luco, let me add, because you helped me structure that document that way, this and that happened, and this was the impact on
your work. So, exactly.
Yes. So we go, thank you, because sometimes people might get used to the, okay,
the
thank you. But it's more powerful when we connect it to how that work contributed more so to the individual somewhere down the road.
I think it also has everything to do with understanding the weight of your service to other people as well.
I think you must use the rest of this.
Really, Dr. Amanda. So once we understand that the task, you know, the task significance really matters, Dr. Amanda, the next leadership question becomes, what do we do when people lose sight of it? Because even in, you know, great teams, we know that people can start to feel disconnected from the different difference that they're making. So what does this disconnection tend to look like, and what can leaders actually do to restore that sense of impact?
Once people lose that sight of their impact, you know, you often see it in small signals. You see it largely less energy, less initiative, and just, you know, kind of just doing the bare minimum for someone to earn their salary and sort of go home. You know, they might not necessarily say my work doesn't matter. They might not say it, but they feel it. And they, because they feel it, they tend to act it out.
Sure.
So at any slight kind of slight problem, instead of, you know, kind of problem solving this thing together and say, okay, yeah, there's a bit of an obstacle, but we're going to find a way. You know, it's going to be like, yeah, it's raining. So, you know, we can't have that outreach that we're planning in any case. It's when those types of kind of reactive, less initiative, less resolve to solve through some of the difficult obstacles, there's a good chance that there is a distance between the work and the impact. And the job for the leader in this case is to close the gap, is to bring stories of impact back to the people that work with you. So Adam Grant's research shows that people are most motivated when they can see and feel their work benefit others. When the connection is missing, maybe because the feedback loop, that feedback loop is broken, or the work sometimes feels repetitive, people don't necessarily stop working, but they just stop believing in the value of the work. And our role here is to build that faith, reignite that faith, and not necessarily by big bonuses or by big increases, but literally by connecting the stories of impact back to the work that's being done. I've seen this happen in businesses, and, you know, sometimes in churches. You know, a volunteer might faithfully run the media desk, for instance, every Sunday, and then no one necessarily says, hey, because of your work, someone had the message and they were saved, etc., etc. So they might just see their role as just making sure the speakers are connected. But the role of leadership here is to sort of link, you know, because you wake up so early, 7 a.m. before everyone else, you come prepared, the sound is, the quality is good, this and that and that. There was a boy that was saved yesterday who ordinarily, these Gen Zs, if the music and things are not well and all of that stuff is not going well, they can easily get distracted, or they might want to stop coming to church. But because you, my media desk person, volunteer, did this excellent work, look at the life of that person and hear the story of testimony for that person. Connecting directly. I think it's also not enough to just have broad testimony that, hey, there are 17 people that are saved and look at how wonderful the work is. It's more about, because this team, you, Luko, you ran a show consistently. You did this. This is the story. This is the impact.
Wow.
So that's the job for leaders.
Love to hear it. And here's another one, Dr. Mann. You know, for a leader who's listening and thinking, yes, I want to make sure that my team feels their impact, what are some habits or tools or even small practices, you know, they can practically start building into their week to do this in a sustainable way?
Excellent. And we're not asking for much here. This is where the idea of cultivating impacts becomes more practical. And you don't need to launch a big program and say, now we are doing, you know, cultivating impact program. What you need is just some intentional rhythm. Here are some three practical ones that we can recommend just for today. Just three practical ones. So number one, stories over statistics. So let's say that I...
Stories over statistics.
Yeah. So,
don't you want to go to preschool?
Sorry?
Don't you want to go teach in preschool? They love repeating what you say. You know how children love repeating? I watch my twins. I'm like, you can stop now.
So stories are more weighty than statistics. Make space regularly, whether in meetings or emails or one-on-ones, to share the real stories of how the team's work helped someone.
Wow.
You know, it's great to say, hey, look at the church attendance numbers have gone by 14%. You know, the sales have increased by 94%. The customer SLAs have improved by X, this and that and that. I think there's a place for that.
Yep.
But if you want to do the work of cultivating impact, is we want to bring more stories.
Mm.
Adam Grant's Lifeguard study kind of revealed, like, just reading a few, you know, the lifeguards, you know, they do all the most difficult work. But by them reading a few rescue stories was enough to help lift performance.
Wow.
Yes, you can kind of say as a manager, guys, this year we rescued 28 people, da, 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 da. But the key is to bring in the story. This person was here. They came with their family. This is the impact that happened, et cetera, et cetera, post that. So number one is stories over statistics.
No, the internet is not doing that to us. Dr. Mando. Okay, I'll get this sorted out. Don't worry, I always do.
Number two, connect people.
Okay, Dr. Mando. I think he's back. Dr. Manda, or, okay, I'll definitely get him in shortly. So I think let's do this.
The words of the Lord are words of life. Your heart is on 657 AM.
Do you need prayer? Radio Pulpit, in collaboration with Need Pray, is ready to stand in prayer with you. Contact us today with your prayer request at 012-334-1222 or WhatsApp us on 067-429-7564. You can also visit us on radiopulpit.co.za for your online prayer request. We will faithfully pray with you. Do you read the Word for Today daily devotionals? We wish to ensure that your copy reaches you on time. You can now receive the booklet directly at an address of your choice or via email if you prefer. It's easy. Visit radiopulpit.co.za, select your choice, and update your details. Or SMS the word devotional to 37871. You will receive a reply SMS with the options. Alternatively, contact client services on 012-334-1257. Standard rates apply.
You and 657 AM and Life, a winning team on the road to eternity.